Good evening, everyone. My name is Savannah, and I would like to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. Thank you to everyone for taking the time this evening to join us for this discussion. Tonight, Senate Democratic Leader Jay Costa of the 43rd District will be taking your calls as he discusses the recently enacted Pennsylvania state budget for the 2026-27 fiscal year. If you would like to participate in today's telephone town hall, you can press star 3 on your keypad at any point in the conversation, and we'll get to your question as soon as we can. So without further delay, I'm going to kick it over to Senator Costa. Over to you.
Thanks, Deb. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for participating in this evening's telephone town hall. I thought I'd take a few moments today to speak with you about some of the work we've been doing in Harrisburg, specifically talking about our recently enacted budget. This past Sunday, Governor Shapiro signed our 2026-27 general fund budget, and then talk a little bit about some of the priorities there. There's really several main parts that I want to talk about as we go forward along those lines, but this particular budget was about $3 billion less than what the governor proposed, and it's one that does not raise anyone's taxes. In fact, it goes in the other direction. It continues to reduce taxes as it relates to how people are being called upon to submit resources along those lines. As I mentioned, it's a $50.8 billion budget to support our students, grow our economy, grow our workforce, but also make our community safer. Probably the biggest part of the budget, about $11.8 billion, is in the education space, and that's collectively everything from pre-K, early learning programs, to higher ed. What's most notable about that is for the third year in a row, we've been able to comply with the Commonwealth Court's ruling that we need to fix our unconstitutional education, basic education funding system. And this year was the third year that we've done that, with $565 million going out to a number of school districts throughout Pennsylvania, including three in our district, four in our district. Each of them received anywhere from $50,000 to $2 million, where Penn Hills and Woodland Hills received that amount of money. But we also made investments in the basic education line item across all school districts. So in addition to the $565, there was another $55 that went out to a lot of school districts in addition to that, as well as a $58 million increase in the special education funding program. But in the education space, there's all other things that we were doing as it relates to higher ed, for example. While the higher ed baseline was maintained flat this year, we did provide what's referred to as performance-based budgeting for Pitt, Penn State, and Temple universities. So the three of them will have an opportunity to be able to demonstrate that they meet these metrics, these goals that we've set for them, to be able to determine that they are making sure they're using the resources wisely and putting them into areas where students are able to work and find work after they conclude their studies. That was another $10 million I mentioned. We also increased in the space with regard to FIA grant program, adding almost $6 million there to ensure that we maintain the level of funding as it relates to the grants we provide through the FIA program. In addition to that, we also put $125 million into school infrastructure improvements, $25 million, which will be for solar for schools, which is a great program, and the remaining $100 million is going to go into mental health and school safety programs. We're going to continue to fund a universal free breakfast for our students, which I think is an important thing, and that's really important to folks to recognize that we're making those investments to be able to provide all of our kids across this Commonwealth free breakfast in order to have them have a full belly when they're learning. Last piece on the education space I want to talk to you about was two things. Student teacher stipend of $10 million, bringing up to $40 million. This is a program where we have students, student teachers, we provide them with a stipend to be able to assist them in their learning experience while they're working in the classroom as they try to achieve their degree and then move on to teachers. It's been a great program. This year we'll do another 3,000 student teachers across Pennsylvania, prep them for the teacher pipeline. And then lastly, we governor put into place a 30-minute recess for all of our kids in K through 5, or 1 through 5, making sure that they have the time to socialize with other kids and do things along those lines to be able to figure out, all those challenges that kids face while they're in school, and to be able to socialize and do what needs to be done. Those are the big things in the education space. Beyond that, we also do an economic development space as well. We're doing a number of different things there. First and foremost, we're continuing to reduce taxes for the corporate net income tax. We continue to reduce it by 0.5%. We are now down to 6.99% beginning January 1. Not too long ago, a couple years ago, before Governor Shapiro came on board, we were about 9.99. And basically, we were not very attractive to a lot of business investments around the country. People weren't willing to come here or establish businesses here. As we continue to gradually move our corporate income tax down, it's having positive effects, and more companies are wanting to locate here in Pennsylvania, which we think is very important to be able to do that. But also, we made investments along the lines of what's referred to as Innovate PA number 2.0. This is going to be a $125 million increase in a program that will provide, comes from insurance premium tax credits, but it will provide capital for promising state capital funds or surplus capital funds for clinical trials, life sciences, and also making sure that the biotech folks in the Commonwealth are able to participate in this program. It's the second time we've done this. We did it about 12 years ago. Extremely successful program that makes significant investments, particularly as it relates to Pittsburgh and Southeast and Southwest PA, where we have the opportunity with the learning, the workforce we have here, and also the opportunities coming out of all of our universities, being able to do these startup companies to support them and get them to the next level, but also in the healthcare space, the life science space, clinical trials and the like, which are going to be very important as well. A couple other things that we did, another almost $4 million that would go to small minority-owned businesses across Pennsylvania. These are typically located in historically disadvantaged business communities. It's a program that's been very successful in supporting small businesses along those lines. And we're doing another $20 million again this year to small business and Main Street program to support our small businesses. There are a few other things that we'll do I'll just touch upon briefly. We are, after 24, 25 years, we're helping our retired school teachers, retired school administrators, retired police officers and firefighters with a cost of living adjustment for their pensions, ranging anywhere from $150 a month, in some instances, to $300 to $350 a month, depending upon how long they've been retired. This is something that we do every 20 years or so, and it's been a long time coming. I know it's a great relief for a lot of our seniors who are collecting these retirement pensions and being able to help them with the affordability issues that we're dealing with now. And also, we have taken steps to invest in our roadways. We are agreed to do a $775 million investment in improving our roads to make sure that we are in a position to make the improvements that need to be done for safety reasons, obviously. Over the next 2 years, we'll do $775 million, primarily maintenance stuff, paving roads, taking care of culverts and things of that nature, $500 between now and July 1st of 2027, and then the remainder $275 in the 27-28 time period. Those are a couple other things that we're doing. In the public safety space, the governor is going to try to put 400 more new state troopers into the workforce. So they'll be doing 4 new cadet classes that will start, something we think is going to be very important to maintain public safety, as well as making sure that we maintain the support that we provide in some good programs. For example, the nonprofit security program is one that comes to mind along those lines, as well as continuing to fund the violence intervention program, something out of our big program. And then finally, a BOOST program. It's called Building Opportunity Throughout Our School Time, BOOST, and that's a program initiated by Lieutenant Governor Davis. We're providing another $11 million in that space as well, which I think is important. So I've rambled out quite a bit. I'll be able to fill in other spaces, other things that we've done. But to me, those are some of the highlights of the work that we've done the last, it results in our budget, and at this point, Deb, I think it would be wise to take some questions and give people an opportunity to ask some questions of us. What you'd like to see us do, if you have any questions about what I just discussed or what we didn't discuss, and I missed, you let me know. But also, if we go back into session later this summer, early fall, if you can just let us know what some of your priorities are or any other questions you might have that I might be able to answer. So, Sal, you want to start with a couple questions?
Yep, we'll do that. But as a reminder to those who have joined the call, you can press *3 at any time, and we will get to your question as soon as we can. We're going to start with some online questions as people are dialing in with their questions. First of all, Alice asks, how does your plan positively include or affect Pittsburgh's senior resident population?
Well, I think one of the things that we're doing, we're going to maintain the property tax and rent rebate at the same levels as before. So that is clearly something that's been helpful. When we increased the limit last year or 2 years ago, in addition, we increased the amount from, I believe, $650 to $1,000. So that's one of the main things that we're doing. If you're a senior who's retired, if you're a retired teacher or a retired school administrator or school employee or a retired police officer or firefighter, I mentioned the retirement, the cost of living adjustments that they'll be able to experience. Those are a couple of things that I see we're doing for seniors, as well as making more programs available through the Department of Aging as well, and looking at some of the things that need to be done there by enhancing some of the programming that's there as well. Those are just a couple of ways that come to mind in terms of things we're working on. If you are a working, we also have the Working Pennsylvania Tax Credit. If you're a senior who's working still, may have an opportunity to participate in that particular program as well.
We'll take one more online question, and then we'll go to the callers. Again, if you would like to ask a question to Senator Costa, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to you as soon as we can. Marianne asks, it's been 1 year since the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. What did this budget do to help support health care and food access?
So we're very much concerned about the impact the One Big Beautiful Bill is going to have on Pennsylvania. It's going to cost us hundreds of millions of dollars. In the healthcare space, it's already resulted in over 88,000, I believe it is, and maybe more now, that no longer have healthcare coverage through Pennsylvania's PENNY program. So just think about that. Over 100, almost 88,000 people no longer are receiving healthcare coverage through the PENNY program. That's disturbing. As it relates to the SNAP program, there have been significant problems there with respect to the administrator costs and the concern we have with a number of other areas that needs to be addressed as it relates to the error rate. And then the Medicaid program, which is going to see a significant number. I think it's projected that over 300,000 Pennsylvanians will no longer be participating in the Medicaid program because of some of the very onerous requirements that need to be met and the timeliness of those requirements and criteria. That's going to be very problematic. So the folks who are going to be experiencing that are going to be our healthcare systems and the like. What did this budget do? This budget continued to make investments in the Medicaid program and trying to increase as best we can the amounts of money. We have to maintain that going forward, so we do not take any steps to do anything that impacted the Medicaid program, for example, reducing any of the program benefits along those lines, which I think is an important thing because there's an effort to continue to do that. That's probably the most significant thing. One of the biggest cost drivers, one of the biggest increases is in the Medicaid space. And I think so that's something we're working on. In the healthcare space, we're going to continue to try to enshrine some of the Affordable Care Act measures that are there that are at the federal level that are always in jeopardy of being cut along those lines. So those are some of the things we're going to continue to do, but we do not implement anything specifically that's going to make it easier for folks to access healthcare. In fact, we did do some investments in some of the other programs, like the LIFE program, for example. We made more investments there to help people along those lines. Those are just a couple of things that we've done to be able to support seniors in that regard.
Wonderful. Let's go to some of the callers. We're going to start with Dennis. Dennis, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hi, Senator.
Hi, Dennis.
My question is about these casinos and that. We're in Allegheny County. Seems to be like the money's disappearing. And like Westmoreland County just paid off some of the things and helped a lot of volunteer fire departments and all that kind of stuff. What's going on with this money? Who's stealing it? That's what I want to know.
Well, I will tell you, I'll tell you where you can look. Two places where you can look to see the gaming money is the, what's called in Allegheny County, the Gaming and Economic Development Fund drives out $10 million a year of gaming money. In addition to that, there is the local share account statewide. Our local share account statewide is a program that's also receives a portion of the table games money. And that money is going to the CFA. This year, they'll probably distribute about $250 million all across Pennsylvania. And I can assure you that Allegheny County gets its more than fair share. What you're referring to, I think, in Westmoreland County, what they're doing is they get a percentage. I think it's a 1% of their table game revenue that they get to the municipality. In Allegheny County in Pittsburgh, we made a decision about 10 years or so ago, maybe less, I shouldn't say 10 years ago. It might have been 16 years ago, actually, 2010, 2011 timeline, where we decided to take our 1% from table games and apply it to libraries. So in Pennsylvania and Allegheny County, all the money from the 1% that you made reference to going to police and fire is going to our libraries across Allegheny County based upon the whatever the library formula is from ACLA, which is the Allegheny County Library Association. That's where that portion's going. And in the city of Pittsburgh, its 1% goes to the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh with their 18 or 19 branches. So those dollars are supporting supporting libraries. As it relates to supporting local fire companies and the EMS, if you go look at the LSA grant program, you'll see that there are a significant number of fire companies and also EMS folks who are receiving money from that program. I can tell you, I know that I worked with Penn Hills, for example, got a new $500,000 EMS van, and a number of other ones along those lines as well. City of Pittsburgh, we were able to get them two EMS vans working with them. So their resources going to these agencies, but we chose to do it differently with respect to the 1%.
Thank you so much. Next, we're going to go to Lewis. Lewis, you are live, and you can ask a question.
Yes, Senator, how you doing?
Good, thanks. How you doing?
Good. Following based on the grant, we're a nonprofit church. What is the allocated money into a nonprofit grant, and what is the maximum without matching your funds?
The nonprofit security grant program, is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Yes, so that's a program that came out of the tragedy to Fear Life. Representative Franco and I really pushed hard to create a program that provides resources to organizations that are deemed to be fall into five categories that the FBI says are categories of individuals or groups or organizations that are at risk of being harm being done to them. So the places you think of are religious organizations, who have issues that related to, who have security needs, if they make a case they have good security needs, that they are a threat. But it could be anything like religious organizations. It could be a variety of other things like organizations based upon origin, other types of ways in which they would be deemed, you know, individuals who belong to organizations that deal with LGBTQ stuff, for example. Those type of things are the ones that that is earmarked and designed to support. There'll be an application period. It's done through an application process through the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency. They analyze all the applications and they make awards typically around in the space of $100,000, $150,000, you know, a little bit more sometimes, a little bit less, depending upon what the need is and whether or not the organization can justify the need. But there are five so criteria based upon the FBI criteria: race, origin, sexual preference, and religion, I think, are 4 to 5.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to go to Audrey in Verona. Audrey, you can ask your question.
Hello, Audrey. Hello, Senator. How are you this evening?
I'm well, Audrey. How are you going this evening?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
Listen, I am... During the COVID outbreak, I suffered with a disease called Guillain-Barré. Nobody ever heard of it. It was crippling. I stayed in the bed, couldn't walk or talk for over 3 months. Oh, finally, I was able to get out of bed and get my life back together again. I had a lot of nursing help and UPMC help, and just a long story, but the worst of it is that during that period, I was able to get caught up with my bills, except for the housing authority. I tried to work with them. Before my brother died last year, he gave them $7,000 and another $5,000. And they still haven't been satisfied. We have, I don't know what to do with them. They sent me a letter today saying that,
let me say this kid, do me a favor. Give my office a call, 241-6690, and indicate that you talked to us tonight, and we'll see if we can look into it and find out what can be done to help assist you. You know, are they still asking you for more money, or they're going to throw you out? Is that what it boils down to?
Yes.
We'll see what we can come up with and see what we can work on with you. Okay?
Okay.
Call the office 412-241-6690 and either ask for Tawanda or Molly. And they'll work with
okay.
you. We'll get them to work
okay.
with you.
Would you give me that number? Would you give me that?
Yep. 412-241-6690. Okay?
One more time.
Yes. 412-241-6690.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Good luck.
Next, we're going to go to Denise in Oakmont. Denise, you are live. You can ask your question.
Hello, Denise. Denise? Okay. Now we're going to go to try Denise one more time. Denise? Okay, now we're going to go to Amelia.
Yeah, hi.
Amelia. Hi, Amelia.
So I was wondering, the last I had heard, we were expecting some major cuts to bus service in both the Pittsburgh regional area and the Philly regional area. Does the budget address that gap at all?
We do not address it right now, but none of those cuts or changes are going to happen. If you really think it can happen, it's July 1st of 2027. We've been trying to get a dedicated funding stream for transit, but we can't get all of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle to participate in the solution. We're going to keep trying, but right now the transit agencies are okay with money that they've received last year. Pittsburgh received $106 million about 10 months ago, and they're going to be good until July 1st of 2027. That's when we got to start looking for a dedicated revenue stream to provide another $100 some million to them going forward.
Thank you so much. As a reminder, if you would like to ask Senator Casa a question, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to you as soon as we can. Next, we are going to go to Yvette. Yvette, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hello, Senator. I'm calling. I wanted to ask you a question about the school taxes. I wanted to know if, because there's a lot of cuts, from the states, I heard the states are not getting money from the federal government. Now, I was thinking with the school taxes, the school taxes. I got a notice with a lot of numbers on it, but it doesn't say how much I'm going to be paying in August. I think it's coming August or September, and I'm kind of nervous because I'm afraid that the bill is going to come very high. Due to all these cuts and everything that's happening in each state, and I'm afraid that if it comes too high, I'm a senior. You know, I don't want to lose my home and be in the
right.
street.
What school district do you live in?
I live in Bushkill, Pikes County, Lehman
okay.
Township.
Okay. Well, I can't speak to what's going to go on there. I can tell you that the school districts here in Allegheny County are going to be ones that are going to be, I think Woodland Hills is going to have a slight increase. I think Penn Hills may be holding the line on taxes.
But it won't be a real big increase where you won't be able to pay the bill, right? It won't be that big.
No, it won't be, not at all. No, I don't believe
okay.
so. And even in your school district. No, school districts around the state, as I mentioned, are going to enjoy $565 million in the adequacy and tax equity program. And
oh,
then
cool.
other school districts are going to get $58 million. So
oh, very good.
Good luck in trying to handle that. All the best to you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Next, we're going to go to Alona in Church Hill. Alona, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hi. Good evening, Senator. So my question is, does this budget eliminate tax incentives for any data centers that are built in the state?
No, it does not. There had been talk maybe 2-3 weeks ago that there would be the elimination of what's referred to as the data center tax exemption from the sales tax. About 20 years ago, we put into place the sales tax exemption for data centers. And over the years, it's grown a little bit. And right now, this year, if we would have done it, would have resulted in maybe $80 million reduction in the in revenue. But this year, we did not. Different versions of reducing it or eliminating it passed the House and the Senate, two separate bills. But at the end of the day, it was not something that made it into the final budget project. So for right now, these data center sales tax exemptions continue to exist, but they've been around. It's been around for about 20 years or so. And hasn't, you know, it's one of those tax sales tax exemptions like many others. I mean, we've got like 60 different sales tax exemptions, everything from clothing to dry cleaning to computer programming and things of that nature. But this one did not. This one still it survived. But I'm sure it will be looked at again next year.
Thank you so much, Senator. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to you when we can. Next, we are going to Cindy in Greenfield. Cindy, go ahead and ask your question.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. My question is about state retirees. You mentioned there's going to be cost of living adjustments for certain categories of them. I've retired for 15 years now and have never, ever received a cost of living adjustment in my pension. Can I ever expect that to happen?
Yes. This one did not do it. This cost of living adjustment for teachers and school workers and the like was referred to as pre-Act 9. Pre-Act 9, or Act 9 was, I believe, in 2005. Anyone who retired after 2005 or so enjoyed a 25% increase and their pensions. And the goal this time is to help those people who did not get that 25% bump in their pensions and put on the schools, on the CERS side, and PSERS, which is the state employee retirement system and the public schools employee retirement system, those two systems. So if you retired after, I guess it was 2005, I'm pretty certain, you would not get that because you had already gotten the 25% bump earlier. When did you start working for the state?
1975.
You would have gotten the bump in 2005. So your pension went up 25% at that point in time. And so what we're trying to do is help those folks who do not enjoy the benefit of that 25% increase.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that part of it.
Yep.
Well,
okay.
Thank you. That answered my question.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Next, we're going to go to Dick Williams in Oakline. Dick, you are on the line, and you can ask your question.
Thank you. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Dick. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, hanging in, more or less.
Listen, we got to do it, Dick.
Yeah, you better believe that. My question is simply this. And it's more of a comment now because of the last woman. I taught in a district around here for 35 years. I retired in 2001, okay?
Okay. Yep.
And I got that big bump, okay? So I was calling tonight to say that some people won't like me for saying this, but since I got that big bump, I don't think, and it was 2001 from
okay.
In the back.
You're right, and 2002, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, it was such a nice bump for many reasons that I don't think I should get a bump. Because all those people behind me did, you know, that, like my good friend, he's now 97, and he was my mentor. He didn't get it. So now, hopefully,
he will now get it,
Yeah, that's going to be great for him because he's in a nursing home, okay? The other factor, not necessarily a question, but an asking comment. Penn State is closing a lot of their local campuses, okay?
Correct.
And I think that's a real great thing for local communities, many at a, in an area. Because I loved when I taught the kids, I always said to them, go on. To a local campus. You know, you don't have to go to the big place, okay? it's a great economic thing for their parents and them in the long run. So I would hope those buildings could be used in a very positive way through Penn State helping, okay, and also the state government, because they could be used for History Society. I also am on the board of RCAC Senior Citizen Center here. There's so many ways that those campuses could help. I know it's a big asking question. And
no, I think you're exactly right. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's not in the budget now, but should be considered.
Yeah, I mean, Penn State received what they received last year, and also they'll be receiving probably 35 or 40%, if not more, of the $10 million that is the performance-based funding decision we made, as long as they're meeting the metrics goals that they need to meet. So that's what they're working on along those lines. And okay. I think that's going to be important. As it relates to these branch campuses, they're trying to develop, as I understand it, a plan to be able to how to utilize them in those communities. Because you're right, those are major community assets that can be utilized in a variety of different ways, working with nonprofits in those communities, working with other organizations in those communities. They present a great opportunity along those lines to do that. So I'm certain that they're going to be looking to do those type of things.
I would hope, Jay. And from what you described in the educational budget, okay?
Yeah.
Most people don't realize that the federal government gives almost nothing, like 9%. Then it's the state and it's the local taxes, okay?
That's right. But local taxpayers and the state are providing most of the funding for our schools,
That's it. And, you know, the federal government should probably do something, but they won't at this point. Thank you. You're doing a great job.
All right. Thanks, Dick. You're the best. Thanks, Dick. Take care.
Next, we're going to go to Olivia in South Hills. But as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question to Senator Costa, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we'll get to you as soon as we can. Olivia, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hey, it's Olivia. Hey, hi, Senator. I actually live in South Squirrel Hill, not South Hills, but thanks for taking the time today. I just was curious what, if anything, is included in the state budget to mitigate or adapt to climate change, especially with the code red, code maroon air quality we're seeing today from Canadian wildfires. That issue is really important here, too.
You know, that's a great question. I can't point to anything specific other than continued investments that we were making in some of the environmental programs. There were not many increases, or we didn't develop any new policies to address. You know, as I look out my window here in my office, it's cloudy. It looks like, you know, it's got a weird color to it. And but unfortunately, there was not much that we did, if anything, in that space other than continue some of the programming that we've already done in the past. Yeah, the programming that we would do, you know, went to things like ensuring that we are doing some of the environmental programs that do monitoring and checking and making sure we have sufficient number of employees who are doing that. That's probably one of the most significant things that we've been doing, increasing and enhancing the monitoring that's taking place along those lines. Certainly on the environmental side, making additional investments through DCNR to make sure that, you know, we're doing what we can as it relates to our parks and things of that nature. But in the climate change space, we're not really doing much at this particular year because we didn't do much policy stuff this year.
You know, Senator, now that you mentioned that, there were a couple of items that were left undone as a part of this year's budget. Do you want to talk a little bit about what there is left to do?
There's quite a bit, Sav, that we need to do going forward, certainly starting with we still need to work on growing the minimum wage, increasing the minimum wage. You know, we're an island among states. You know, even West Virginia's at $8.75 is $1.50 higher than what we're doing. That's about $3,000 a year for an average worker who works 2,000 hours a year. But other states around us are $11 and $15, $16 an hour. That's going to be a priority item for Senate Democrats in the fall and in next year. But also as it relates to transit funding that came up earlier, we have to find a solution to transit funding that's going to be so important because we can't wait till June or July next year to try to resolve it. We've got to do it later this year or also early next year. Finally, we have to take a look at what can be done along the lines of skill gains, regulation, and taxation. And what do we do with those proceeds? My goal is to be able to use the proceeds from skill games and place it into transit funding and transportation funding, roads and bridges. That's going to be important as we go forward. Those are three things that come to mind. We're going to continue to protect the programs that provide as a social safety net for folks. I think it's going to be important for us to do that. And those are some of the items, Sav, that I think we can look at going forward.
That sounds great. We will keep an eye on that as we come back into session in the fall. Next, we're going to go to Caitlin in Oakland. Caitlin, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hello, Senator.
Hi, Caitlin.
It's nice to talk to you. I had just a quick question. It sounds like partially answered by a previous question, but I wanted to know what the state budget looks for with contributions to our local libraries. It sounds like some of that is provided by the gaming tax, but I wanted to know more about the particular state tax that was just passed.
So there were libraries are essentially flat funded. We did not make any increases in what we normally do to the public-private library lines, and so that's going to maintain status quo. The gaming money I was referring to goes to the Allegheny County Library and also the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh. Those are the two systems that receive 1% of the table game revenue, respectively, for our county only. For the casinos, we have in Allegheny. We have in Allegheny, the one. Other casino counties decide to do different things with their 1%. So we thought it was important enough to put into libraries. And we continue to have the library grant programs that still exist. And the libraries for blind and visually impaired, those lines are all, again, were all flat funded this past year.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much.
The last thing I would add is I'm working with, libraries are important to me. I've been a big advocate. I serve as a life trustee at the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh and work closely up here with Millar Library, where I live, over in Edgewood and Fort Hills with the grants. But Representative Gales and I added another $1.5 million RCAP grant today from the governor now for Penn Hills Library. So this is in addition to the $750 we were able to do earlier with regard to other grant programs. So we're well on our way to making improvements to the public library in Penn Hills, which I think they're very important community assets, and we're going to do what we can to continue to support them.
Oh, for sure.
Thank you so much. Next, we're going to go to Mariah. Mariah, you are live. Ask your question. Go ahead.
Hi, Senator. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm over here at Picklesburg.
Oh, nice.
My question is, in the beginning of your statements, you said that there was about, almost like $10 million for grants when it comes to Black-owned businesses that has been enabled?
It was a 3.7, I believe, increase and what's referred to as a grant program that goes into in the neighborhood communities, disadvantaged communities, historically disadvantaged communities for underserved communities. I'm trying to get the specific language for you real quick, but I believe it was 3.7 million this year to build upon what we already have, and I think we've increased it by $87 million over the past number of years. So
okay, that's awesome.
3.7, yeah, it's called this small minority-owned businesses across the Commonwealth through historically disadvantaged business program. So you would need to go to DCED, Department of Community Economic Development, look for the historic disadvantaged business program, and then there they'll be setting up how you can go about applying for a grant in that space.
Thank you so much, because I'm not asking that. So I'm trying to do a nonprofit. And I wanted to ask you, how many people about food health and also homeless issues. So you mentioned Woodland Hills. I actually had Senator Summer Lee come to Woodland Hills, and he started the Coalition Against Violence and Woodland Hills Students Against Gun Violence, and we were able to do that together. So I would like to, a nonprofit, I'm just not sure how to go about it, and how many people that needs to endorse me so I can get the ball moving.
Well, I mean, I think you need to put together sort of what I'll call a business plan, and then looking, for example, to places like the Disadvantaged Business Commute Program along those lines. I would also look, I would talk with the Small Business Administration. They can work with you, help in developing your business plan. You know, what the universe of folks you'll be working with, what nature programs and services you'll be providing, how are you going to sustain what you're doing going forward? Those are all the questions that they can answer for you. I mean, they're best equipped to be able to do that. So I would suggest that's where I would look if I were you at this point.
Thank you so much, Senator. We're going to take an online question really quickly from Leslie, who asks, what is your position on school vouchers?
I am not a fan of school vouchers. I think they take resources away from the public education system, and I think that we're at a point where we need to continue making certain that we're adequately, fairly, and equitably funding all of our school districts, and we're not there yet. And that's the purpose of the adequacy program that the Commonwealth Court said to us, that we are not funding properly and we need to take steps to do that. I believe the school voucher program takes resources away from public education. And we have a significant number of other programs to assist families in alternatives to public schools. We have the charter school programs. We have the cyber charter schools. We have the EITC program, in this case the tax credit program, the opportunity scholarship program. There are a number of programs for families to avail themselves to get support to help their child in a non-public setting.
Thank you so much. We still have some time to take questions from listeners, so if you would like to ask your question to Senator Costa, press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to you when we can. Next, we're going to go to Beverly in Forest Hills. Beverly, you are live. You can ask your question.
Hello.
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 Yes.
Yes, I'm asking a couple of things. Like I said, I'm a senior citizen living in Forest Hills, and I'm over 65, and I'm paying my school tax, my property tax. I don't have any kids, but my taxes and everything went up, and I've been trying to get a roof. Is there any programs for seniors to help me get a roof? Now, I can afford something, but the prices that I've gotten for my roof so far starts at $20,000 and up, and I'm on a fixed income, and I cannot afford that. And my second question is, on my street, my sidewalk is crumbling, and I've asked the borough about it, and they claim that it's not the responsibility, but the homeowner's responsibility. And I need somebody, because what's happening when the people ride up the street, the crumbs from the sidewalk are hitting on people's cars, and there's a homeowner, then they're trying to make me responsible for it. So who could I talk to about fixing my sidewalk?
So let me start with the your roof and your windows or whatever. First place I would ask you to think about calling maybe Action Housing. They have some, I believe they have some programs along those lines, or Habitat for Humanity, some of those programs. They may have resources to assist you. Also, at the federal level, the federal government finally was able to get a law passed that provided, that will provide about $10 million, I believe it was, to Pennsylvania for what's called the Whole Home Repair Program. My colleague, Senator Nikhil Sabal, and then Representative Nell County Executive Sarah Inamorato, were responsible for creating a whole home repair program in Pennsylvania that did exactly that. Provided you met the income limitations or income limits, you'd be eligible for a grant to be able to support you on roofs and windows and other things along those lines. If it's a window situation, you may want to reach out to call Dollar Energy or LIHEAP. The LIHEAP program may be able to assist you with new windows if, in fact, they're causing you to lose energy through your home. But the whole home repair program, you may need to reach out to your federal, you said Penn Hills, I think you said. Is that where you live at, or where do you live at? Well, if you're in Penn Hills, I think it would be Congressman Chris DeLuzio's office, or if you're in the city of Pittsburgh, and some of the other communities in the Mon Valley will be Representative Summer Lee. They should be able to help you finding out information about this new federal program that just came online about 4, 5, 6 days ago. There was a housing bill that Congress passed, strong bipartisan support that the president refused to sign, and ended up becoming law because it extended the 10-day period where it becomes law if he doesn't sign it. So I would reach out to your congressperson's office, and also possibly Action Housing to be able to get support there. For the sidewalk, again, it's my understanding it is the homeowner's responsibility. I'm not familiar with programs, quite frankly, that provide that type of infrastructure investment. But give the office a call, and we can check into that for you as well.
Thank you so much. Next, we're going to go to Celeste. Celeste, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Celeste, you still there? Must be gone.
Oh, unfortunate. Well, would you like to talk?
Yes. Who's next?
Next, we're going to go to Dana. Dana, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Good evening. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
All right. So I'm a social worker here in the city, and just actually generally the region, and we're anticipating a lot of those upcoming changes in Medicaid eligibility, specifically with the implementation of work requirements. I know you spoke briefly about kind of what the plan was for specifically Medicaid access, but could you expand a little bit more upon what the state is hoping to do and planning to do to protect access to healthcare as well as actually expand it?
Well, I will tell you, as it relates to what is anticipated with the Medicaid program, first and foremost is getting information out to what's coming January. I think that's going to be one of the biggest challenges. Folks understand, and the large majority of folks are already meeting the requirements, obviously, but there will be a significant number of folks who need to understand exactly what's going to be required of them, how frequently. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you qualify once a year. I think now it would be have twice a year to be able to provide information demonstrating that you're meeting the requisite number of hours per week and per month to be able to maintain the benefit. But I do think people need to know what exactly counts as the time as it relates to whether it be obviously work, volunteer work or schooling or things or other reasons why you would not need to be able to qualify for that type of service. So that's going to be the biggest challenge that we're going to be facing as we go forward, because I do think it's going to be a problem. What are we going to do? We're going to do what we can to protect what we know here and have here in Pennsylvania. And that's going to be something. Last year, you may remember, there were some cuts, there were some changes to the Medicaid program here in Pennsylvania to help limit costs. We did not do any of that this year because we knew what was coming and what the impact's going to look like. But there are going to be a lot of people who are going to not have health care coverage through the Medicaid program. And we really prided ourselves on Pennsylvania being one of those states that implemented the Medicaid expansion program, where we ended up with about 800,000 people who were on the Medicaid expansion program paying modest premiums for very limited benefits, but were helpful benefits that I think provided them with sort of a maintenance level of care so that their conditions, for example, would not get worse. What's going to happen is a lot of these folks are going to be seen in hospitals. Hospitals are going to have to provide the service but not be able to retain the cost associated with providing that service. And their uncompensated care is going to go up. And that's obviously that ultimately impacts all of us whenever our premiums go up, when their costs go up. So it's going to be an interesting challenge as we go forward. But nothing specifically that we're doing right now other than we're trying to put into place some of the measures that the Affordable Care provides already to us. But it's always subject to risk. So we're trying to enshrine them into Pennsylvania law to address some of those things and making sure that our healthcare providers are doing what they can to provide as much service as they can to folks.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I think I would just really impress upon your colleagues and others that this is a really scary time, especially for a lot of my patients who, majority of my clients are Medicaid or Medicare eligible. And I largely work within the addiction realm, and so folks have been able to attain recovery through access to medication, access to behavioral health services, and the cyclical need to renew benefits every 6 months to work or volunteer 80 hours a month is really not, it's not possible. We saw in the 90s how these work requirements have really harmed families, and I'd be curious if there's even just like an opportunity to hire more people at the county assistance office level to be able to really provide peak management care to ensure that people have continued non-disruptive access to health care.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because in our conversation with Secretary Arkus at DHS, that's one of the things that we have to do, notification of people and making sure they understand what they need to do, what the requirements are going to be. And it's going to require more employees, and that's what the administrative side of this is going to be unbearable. In terms of how much money is going to need to be spent, maintaining records, maintaining and employers who are going to have to be sending documentation, providing to the people who the people are working. The administrative burden is going to be significant on state government and also on employees, employers, nonprofits and that nature. So it's going to be challenging, and there's nothing good that's going to come from this. I'm sorry. I'm a believer that this is not a good it's not good for us. And you know, there's always allegations about waste, fraud, and abuse. It does not exist to the degree that people think it exists. I mean, it is captured and caught when those type of things happen. But, you know, I think of the 61-year-old widow, you know, who's not going to be able to go find work and not going to be able to, you know, volunteer 20 hours a week somewhere based upon maybe some health conditions that aren't severe enough to mean that she exempt her from those work requirements. That's going to be the other issue. There's going to be a lot of people who are not going to simply be able to do what needs to be done, and they're going to be without health care, and that's going to become a burden to the hospitals and to taxpayers and premium payers, I said, going forward. So to me, it's very short-sighted, but you know, we're hopefully, you know, well, I got to be careful what I say. Things change going forward, and maybe we can repeal some of that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you for the work you do. We appreciate your work. It's important.
Yeah, we're all in it together.
Yep. Thanks again for your work.
Thank you so much, Dana. We're coming down the back end, but we still have time to take a few questions. So if you would like to get your question in before we're done tonight, you can press *3 on your keypad. But for now, we're going to go to Patricia in Wilkins Township. Patricia, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Thank you, ma'am. Hello, Senator. Thank you for taking my call. I have a concern. I have a concern about people starting work at 7 1/4 an hour. I've been at the same place for 12 years. I started at 8 1/2 an hour. I finally, in the past 5 years, got increments each year, bringing me to a decent wage, low decent wage. I'm worried that the 7 1/4 people are going to get maybe a $5 an hour increase in their wages. Do I get the $5 too? I have skills that I have experience. So if
I would say if we do the minimum wage increase, my view is that it's not going to go from $7.25 to $15. It'll be an incremental increase over maybe 3 years, for example. The bills that passed the House, which I think have garnered a lot of support among Democrats and some Republicans too, is would be one that in the first year would take it to $11 an hour. Then I think the next year to 13, and then the next year or subsequent year to 15, and then have a cost of living adjustment associated with it going forward. So we don't have to face this in the future. So if you're making $10 an hour now, you would year one go to $11. But it would not say that if they went from $7.25 to $11, that would be what? That'd be $3.75 an hour increase. You would not automatically get a $3.75 increase. Well, if that makes any sense to you. It whatever the rate would be required to be paid, you would be paid that rate. So if it was 11, if you're making $9 or $10 now, you would automatically go up to 11. But if you're making 13 right now, you would not get a bump beyond that at that time.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we're going to go to Sharice in Penn Hill. Sharice, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Thank you so much, Senator, for taking my call. My question is in regards to our election in November. I know we all know what's going on with the voting, and I'm just a little nervous. How are we as Pennsylvanians going to be ensure that our vote is first of all going to be counted, and secondly that people our people will be safe when they are going to the polls? How do we ensure our votes are first of all, you know, are we prepared for November in our election, because we know it's going to be a lot?
Yeah, that's a great question. The way you framed it, will we be prepared? I'm very confident we will be prepared. We have an outstanding Secretary of State, Al Schmidt, who does a tremendous job overseeing our elections in Pennsylvania, and he's a national leader. We also have a very strong and solid system in place that's safe and secure, and our votes will, in fact, across the state, be tabulated, be counted, of course, and they'll be safe, and the results will be results that we can have confidence and trust in. We have mechanisms in place to ensure that people have access to voting, electronics machinery they have now is some of the state of the art. Other counties, you know, have different types of stuff, but all of it is in good space, a good place. We've made a significant investment in 2021, I think it was, in terms of that. But I do think at the end of the day, our system is safe, and we're going to take steps to be able to do that. Individually, parties are working to ensure that there are things like no voter intimidation. Folks are worried about ICE agents being located at polling places. That's all going to be addressed. Folks will have access to be able to get to the polls and vote, and I anticipate there will be a very strong turnout. People will want their voices heard, and we're not going to do anything to disenfranchise voters. We're not going to need the state level to be able to do that, to make it, you know, make it more difficult for people to vote. We're trying to make it easier for folks to vote. And but I got great confidence that our secretary will lead all the counties and doing well. We've got great election workers, directors in each of the counties, but we also have great poll workers who year in and year out provide a great service to the, to our Commonwealth. And that's their public duty, and they appreciate, they want to do it, and they do it very well. And they're very honest and people, and I think that's what's important. That's how the system works. You have honest people operating and running it like we do. That's why it works well. But thanks, that's a great question. I'm sorry.
No. Someone online submitted a question asking, how can I get involved in the democratic process?
If you want to participate in the electoral process, I mean, I think you can call the county and be able to be a poll worker or be engaged as maybe a, somehow maybe a poll supervisor or something. But I know they're always looking for folks to participate in that process. If you're looking to engage in political activity, whether it be for a candidate or for or a party of some sort, you'd have to do that on the political side. I really can't talk to you about where to go there, but I would just suggest you reach out to some of the campaign committees. They're always looking for volunteers, folks who want to be able to help in any way they can, you know, and be able to do things to help the party. If you want to help a particular party, Democrat, Republican, or whatever, you know, reach out to those respective county chairs and see what role you can play in that regard as well.
Thank you so much. I think we're coming down to our last question of the evening. We're going to go to Karen in Allentown. Karen, you are live and you can ask your question.
Hello, my name is Karen. Good evening, committee, for allowing me to speak. I am 64. I've been on disability for the last 7 years and a homeowner for the last 3 years. Each year I have invested in, the second year I had put a new bathroom in. The house is 126 years old.
Come on.
Allentown, as in the district of 15210. Then this past winter, December, I had a whole new roof put on. I have equipment that I need, like CPAP, nebulizers by my bedroom, but due to my money shortage, because I have not only a mortgage, but my roofing costs as much as my mortgage, and I need some more plugs, but the local Hilltop Alliance, I've tried some of the other places like Habitat for Humanity, and they were saying there was no release of money. Did you mention that there was money released to those local funding?
No, what I'm saying is there's a new small grant program through the federal government called Whole Home Repair, and it's an application program. It's a federal program, so I suggest you said Allentown, which is in the city of Pittsburgh, so I would suggest you reach out to Congresswoman Summer Lee's office to see if you can get some support or find out how that program is going to be administered. They would be able to help tell you whether or not what the criteria, the application criteria is going to be, what the income limits are, et cetera. So that would be my recommendation. You already talked about the Hilltop Alliance. That would be another group, in Action Housing, Habitat for Humanity. Rebuild Allegheny, that's another one I would look at. Rebuild Allegheny, I think, is the name of the program. They want to reach out to them as well. Some of them may be able to assist you in terms of what you're looking to be able to do.
Thank you so much, Senator. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our time together. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing about this year's budget?
No, I mean, I'm just pleased that, first and foremost, we got it done. Secondly, There are no new taxes. In fact, there's tax increase, tax reductions, no new taxes, tax reductions. And also the investments you're able to make in education, which is always a priority for me and for our caucus, and also some of the stuff for our retirees, public servants, and also our police and fire folks, all deserving a long-awaited retirement bump. So more work needs to be done. We'll tackle the issues going forward. And we'll probably be having another one of these conversations as we get into September, mid-September or so, to find out what's on your mind. And hope you enjoyed tonight's conversation. And I hope everyone has a good rest of the summer. Stay safe and stay inside while we have all this terrible smoke outside to be able to have to breathe in.
If you were unable to ask your question tonight, you could stay on the line and leave a message, and someone in Senator Costa's office will get back to you as soon as possible. But other than that, thank you so much for participating, and have a great rest of your evening.
See you, everybody.